This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Did you all get the wake-up call real early this morning? You know, one of the first things that popped into my head was about my neighbor. I thought, boy, this is really an auspicious thing. I'm going to do a little old-timer memory here, apropos of nothing special, but, you know, I go up and down the steps between the dorm building and the community building, and the first two times I was here in the early 2000s, Orioki was served in the Zendo, and servers ran up and down those steps. I was one of them. Thank goodness for change, right? So this business of working with self is can be really slippery and tricky. On the one hand, the harder we try, the more we're working against ourselves. It's just the dynamic of the psyche. It doesn't want us to see behind the curtains. And yet, you know, we have to show up, right? We have to have the intention. I was reflecting on what Batchelor pointed out about the fourth link. You know, there's form, feeling, perceptions, intention, and attention in the fourth link. So that's you know, the dynamic with the consciousness in the fourth link, it's locating experience to here, to this skin bag. But intention and attention starting right there, being awake, right before contact, awareness. This guy by the name of Tejaniya, I mentioned him a lot last year when I was here. I had his little encouragements, some of them we had posted up around the campus. He's a Vipassana teacher in Myanmar. And one of his students, Doug McGill, who lives in Minnesota, in Rochester, Minnesota, does the daily Tejaniya, and his demeanor, his spirit that he conveys in that is, try but don't try too hard. And when I say that when we try too hard in this, it can work against us. what really is happening there is that when we're trying too hard, we're probably activating, keeping things that we're really trying to sort of ease away from active. The ego dynamics, selfing dynamics. One of the people in the Zen group I work with calls it, he says, I can tell when I'm being performative. There's another thing I ponder. So, you know, when we're talking about the study of the self, my sense is that to study the Buddha way and to study the self, we're still using the self to study the self. Which brings me back to using the mind to study the mind. And then in our discussions, our sharing around the left-right hemisphere dynamics, we're always pretty quick in these conversations I've had, not only here but elsewhere, always really quick to come back. Well, we have to make sure we never lose touch with the left. We're really quick to come back to that. When I think about that, when I think about what's going on in the world, where has it gotten us? Really? When we talk about practice, we talk about, you know, getting in touch with our innate wisdom. How much wisdom are we seeing around us? What are we afraid of? I'm old. I'm not so afraid of it anymore. I know, you know, my career is over with. All I have to worry about is my wife and my daughter and son-in-law and grandchild, you know, and I'm pretty cozy with that, you know. And I can be pretty goofy, you know, and all that. But does this mean being goofy? What is this wisdom? Is it our ego wisdom? I don't think so. I was, when Ahuti was here and these other women a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about Svargo Schuller's work, her husband's work, and it reminded me of, there's a book, gosh, I'm going to have to add it to the list, and I just got the list all done, In the Spell of the Sensuous. And, gosh, I'm really blanking on the author's name right now, but he talks about when he was doing his postdoctorate work way back when, and he was actually going to do it on magicians, and he wanted to do it on, you know, the aspect of, you know, shamans and magicians, that dynamic. And so he went to live with shamans in Bali and elsewhere in Southeast Asia. One of the first things that he discovered was shamans, he/she shamans, always lived at the edge of the village. They never lived in it. And the reason why is that they wanted to maintain contact with human and other than human. Why? Because to keep things in balance. Now, the villagers thought that, you know, the shaman was primarily to keep them healthy, you know, a healer, like a healer type of thing. But the shaman always saw their jobs, their role as, first off, this intermediary between human and non-human, listening. So They spoke, you know, they spoke different languages. They, you know, they could hear different languages. They were attuned differently because they could tell when things were out of balance between the human and non-human world. It almost, the sense of the spirit in the song of the grass roof hermitage. I think the world, you know, and this is, for me, this is where my sense of where the practice is positioning me. I feel the world differently. I don't need intense oneness experiences because the being is shifting. It's a tuning to the world. I feel the world differently. I can feel the sharpness and the pain and the anger. I feel that more acutely too. Because, as Dogen tells us, that's all Buddha Dharma. That's all part of it. But what I feel is this, like I keep saying, is this incredible love that it keeps everything in balance, in order. And I think that's, and I can feel it, you know, I can feel it in my practice, that softening of selfing. You feel it. You do. And maybe, you know, in Sashin here, maybe yesterday, maybe today, you feel a shift. There's a shift that happens in Sashin. You come in, and the being is kind of resisting it. This is an abrupt switch here, to come into Sashin from your busy world and to just sit facing a wall, not being able to pick up this and do this, not being able to, oh, well, I'm going to go shopping, whatever we do to keep ourselves other than with ourselves. And there's a lot to be learned from ourselves in this grass roof hermitage. It's all right here. It's amazing what you can learn. And then how that manifest in your experience in the world, what you continue to learn. One thing that you learn is what you begin to ponder, what is this self? What is this? What is it we think of as self? When we really become alive to, you know, it starts out as an conceptual something, intellectual something, and then, you know, we bounce this word interbeing around a lot, and we think, oh, that's cool, you know, I'm getting it. But it's embodiment. And it's coming in, and it's just as simply as what Dan Siegel pointed out in the listening passage, where do I start and you begin? Is there a definite something? Are there two separate selves? Not two. So there's something, we go from using the mind to use, you know, to study the self, to use the self to study the self, and then something else begins to happen. And my suggestion is once the, in practice, once that ego side of us, we need it, yes, we need it, but once it begins to quiet, something else is coming forward. As Ian McGilchrist said, the master, the wisdom side. It's interesting, though, Jill Bolte Taylor also points out that the emotional, right hemisphere emotional, sort of doesn't have any brakes. And is kind of like a teenager behind the wheel of a car and just learning to drive, you know, behind the wheel of a car, you know. It's kind of that dynamic. And so that has to be tempered. Although Siegel also points out in his book Brainstorm about the adolescent brain, there is that element of adolescent spirit that we want to maintain for the rest of our lives. Coming back to Tejaniya, you know, he says, don't try too hard. But be awake. Don't try too hard, be awake. Be curious. Over and over he says that, actually, over and over. And when he's doing this, he's not talking about just when your fanny's on the cushion. He's talking about all the time. Being awake. And so bringing this awareness more continually, with more intent and attention, is changing the neural pathways. And what I've noticed is there's something shifts. Something shifts and this momentum builds. You feel it. The being orients more in this direction. It feels when things are really out of whack. I don't need this so much telling me you feel it. Genuine you feel. Are things in attunement? You feel that? No. And there's this sort of corrective thing that happens. It gets faster. Oh, that wasn't probably the most skillful thing. Maybe I better repair. Attending to better repair. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. You know, I do this work, you know, I do this work, and still the weeds appear. Being awake and with attention and attention, over and over and over. You know, very patiently, can stay with it. Perishable or not, the original master is present, trusting that. Trusting it. The proof is in the pudding. I like chocolate, by the way, if anybody's interested. The proof is in the pudding. And I think, you know, that resistance is coming from the psyche, you know, the emissary, that's the emissary in us. And it's, you know, we were talking yesterday, the back and forth dynamic. But we gotta really be serious, take that pushback seriously. The practice opens us up if we're genuine and sincere in the practice and continue with it. If we work in community, sangha, you know, how we are with each other in sangha, you know, in our lives, in our marriages, our partnerships, whatever, you know, listen. The other in our relationships, you know, they may not be practitioners, but they're telling us something. They may not have it right, but they, you know, and they got their stuff coming up forward too. Their conditioned patterns coming up too. And when we understand and appreciate that, you know, making rocks out of them stops. Let's things soften and we can appreciate and begin maybe, oh. And tend to, always tending to, carefully, patiently, curiously. What's it like when our lives aren't wrapped up in the picking and choosing? In our normal habit patterns, just simply when the habit patterns begin to quiet. What's that like? Interesting line. Lines, let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Let go of hundreds of years, let go of how many years, how many centuries, how many millennia of conditioning are coming right down through you right now. Open your hands and walk innocent. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. It's all right here. That's it. That's all. Are there any questions? How are we doing on time?
We have a little over 10 minutes. Okay. Unless there's a... Maybe someone has the schedule. Is there a break between now and Samu, or do
no.
we go until 11?
We go till 11.
Yeah, a little over 10 minutes.
This is weird. I keep telling myself that I should keep my mouth shut during these talks, and I can't resist coming up with these nonsensical comments and questions. There are a couple now. One of the things about self not being able to study self, I always liken it to a knife not being able to cut its own handle. Mm-hmm. Right, so you can't really have a knife and use it to cut its own handle. And second, about this working harder and harder to get somewhere. Reminds me of this story that there was this alley cat that was walking in the very rich neighborhood. On one of the fences it was walking, it sees this cute, beautiful dog in the yard. It's just going around and chasing its tail. Keeps going. And it says, "Hey, what are you doing?" It says, "Well, my owners are very rich. They send me to dog philosophy school. And there they told me that the dog's happiness is in its tail." And I said, "If I can catch it, then I'll be happy." And the cat just smiled and said, "You know, I don't have any rich owners, and I haven't gone to any philosophy school, but I've realized the same thing, that indeed, my happiness is in my tail. But also I have realized that if I just go along about doing my own business, it just follows me. I don't have to do anything, it just be myself and it follows me." So again, one of those things. And one final question is this right and left brain. Which one of these are more important to the survival? Because the right brain, we were looking at it, it's risk taker.
They're both important for survival. That's almost every organism, creature in existence has a bilateral brain. Just not us.
So we can't just discard one at the expense. Huh? We can't discard one at the expense.
No.
Okay.
No, because one, just think from the survival aspect, one takes in the big picture and one starts picking out the details. Okay? So they work in tandem.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the talk. I'm sitting with a question about this Bodhidharma quote. On the one hand, as best I remember it, is if you use mind to study mind, you'll miss the mark. Mm-hmm. But if you don't use mind to study mind, you'll hit the mark. Probably missing a few words in there. And also this passage from Dogen that you've shared a couple of times, to study the Buddha way is to study the self, to study the self is to forget the self. And it continues on. So when I have these two teachings together, I wonder if we could say, to study the Buddha way is to forget the self. We could move straight from the first to the third and skip over, if you will, the second. And that's my, where it seems like, if I'm understanding what you've been sharing this week, we can get stuck. So what I want to ask is if, what that seems possible or plausible or correct or something in your view, or if trying to sum it up as to study the Buddha way is to forget the self misses something important that Dogen's trying to share with us in between.
What it misses is the study of the self. I think that I really appreciate that being in there, because in a lot of Mahayana, that's never mentioned. Right? Mm-hmm. And in my experience, it's not vast, but in my experience over the years, I rarely hear that. Study the self. And we forget it. We get hooked up on what does this mean, what does this mean, I'm going to study this sutra, what does this mean, and I got to make sure I read all these sutras, and then when I read these sutras, it takes us all up in the head, away from the self. And so that's why I really appreciate that being in there. You know, he's connecting us back to the early teachings there. He's saying, don't forget. Yeah, so it's the work. It's the study of the self. It brings up this dynamic of using the mind to study the mind. Mm-hmm. It wants us to be in there, mm-hmm. because it's a deeply something in there that needs to be tended to.
Mm-hmm. So as a follow-up question, it sounds like. Dogen is opening up Bodhidharma's quote in a way to identify something really important in our practice, right? Don't move straight to forgetting the self, but engage with the self.
Yeah. Okay. And that's my sense of what Dogen is doing in all of his work. You know, is that in starting with, by and large, Kachana, this world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. So that's that very passage is what Nagarjuna started his work with, and the spirit of the dependent arising. And then I think I'll come back to this tomorrow with Dogen, but he was saying, you know, we're talking about how we are conditioning, we're conditioned by language. And, you know, so he takes stuff like dreams, and he says, well, you know, dreams are what we you know, in traditional language, in the Buddha Dharma, dreams are just, they don't exist. So we just go like this with them. But dreams arise due to causes and conditions, right? The same thing with self. Self arises due to causes and conditions. And so he was saying, let's spend some time with this. What do dreams tell us? And this helps us see, alter our relationship with dreams and with the world. He's continually doing this. It's the same pattern. From that passage, the duality of it is and is not, going through Nagarjuna, it's there in koans and in Dogen. That to me is the heart of Dogen. Yeah, he talks about the cook, you know, the cook, being very careful with the rice, looking for rocks in the rice. Dogen was very careful.
Question. You mentioned, I don't know if we have time for this, but you mentioned in your talk about shamanism. Mm-hmm. Is there a role for that in Zen? I mean, when we, you know, at the meal, we talk about the different bodhisattvas and stuff. I just wonder if there's a shamanistic root that plays into what you're talking about the self.
Can we come back to that this afternoon? Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.